Okay. At this time, we're going to convene a public comment session. The procedures of the board allow for a public comment session during each meeting. Each speaker is allotted a maximum of 5 minutes to address the board, and I ask that all speakers comply. Before the speakers begin, I will say that it is the tradition of the board to listen closely to all the speakers, but in the interest of time and fairness to all speakers to get everyone in, we ask that questions of the speakers be limited, as I'm sure they would be happy to avail themselves outside of the board meeting for question and answers as appropriate. We appreciate the fact that we have guest speakers today. It's an important part of our process as a public university, and we look forward to hearing from them. I am not going to pronounce these names correctly, I am sure, throughout this, but I will do the best I can. I'd like to call on Michael Skibsky.
The light is on, but this keeps shutting.
Hello. I'm Michael Skibsky. I'm a sophomore in the Geese College of Business. Our school currently has no symbol and no mascot, and I think the time has come to fix that problem. Since Chief Illini Weck was retired, the post of official symbol has been vacant for 12 long years. The stage is set for a new player, and the expectations are high. But why have a symbol or mascot at all? Dr. Suzanne Whitborn addressed this point in Psychology Today when she discussed fan experience at sporting events. She believes that the level of satisfaction derived from a day in the stands depends not just on the outcome of the gameplay, the skill of the coaches, or the quality of a swag shot from a t-shirt cannon, but also the popularity of the team mascot. We as students each chose this school for a reason. The education we get here launches us into our lives' work. We will forever identify with this school. The University of Illinois will be stamped on my diploma and announced on my resume. It is part of my personal history for the rest of my life. As Americans, we can point to our flag to identify us. We like being part of something good and knowing our place in this world. A team symbol represents our school, our team, our place. It represents us. So, who are we exactly? On the drive back to school after Thanksgiving break, my dad, brother, and I had a discussion about the meaning of the team name Fighting Illini. I was intrigued by the origin of the name, how it was used to describe specific infantry units from Illinois who fought in World War I. So I had an idea, and I did what everyone my age does when they have an idea. I posted it to social media, the UIUC Reddit page. I had a couple of rough images and rationale for the idea. I asked for support, and I got plenty of it, along with a lot of support and excitement for the idea. A creative team came together, including think tank master Alex Villanueva, our uniform designer Shane Kausert, and artist David Hood, who created the refined images. We also have ROTC member Ben Dubin, who will be here in the audience soon, and he will be wearing the champ uniform. These images have evolved over the past several months based on suggestions contributed by students, alums, and Fighting Illini fans. Months of intense scrutiny and passionate discussion. The most common demands were that the new University of Illinois symbol be representative, unique, inoffensive, and an emblem of pride. The result of this crowdsourcing experiment is this symbol right here. Champ. Champ is a World War I doughboy in stylized form, depicted in U of I orange and blue. Champ is a historical figure who carries a flag of victory. Champ celebrates and honors those who sacrificed everything to preserve our country's ideals. But I know some of you may be thinking that a fighting figure may be too controversial. But that's a tough claim to stick when you look at the current list of active college team names. A huge percentage of schools have elected to use fightin' words in their names. On the symbolic battlefield of sports, even non-military schools have sanctioned and chosen team names like the Generals, the Majors, the Colonels, and Warhawks. There are Minutemen, Warriors, Crusaders, Knights, and Spartans. There are also Paladins, Battlers, Conquerors, Bullets, Grenadiers, Marauders, and Rebels. And finally, there are the Fighting Irish, Fighting Scots, Fighting Leathernecks, and our very own uniquely named Fighting Illini of the University of Illinois. As a symbol for the Fighting Illini in our school, Champ will represent bravery, strength, and triumph over opposition. I look at this image and I want to stand up a little straighter. In a practical sense, Champ is an easy transition from Chief, similar letters and identical word length. Champ is even contained in the name of the school's hometown, Champaign. Champ, like Chief, can be portrayed by any student at halftime, and in a head and shoulders representation, easily identified and uniquely ours. Champ is a figure to be proud of, with a quiet dignity that comes from confidence. You look at Champ and you know that things can get accomplished. So what's the reaction so far? All the online activity surrounding Champ has attracted media attention. This month, I was interviewed by both Champaign and Chicago newspapers. I also spoke in radio interviews and I appeared on several TV news spots to discuss Champ's origin and historical significance. Interest is growing and response is encouragingly positive. I came here to ask you to end the deliberations and approve a University of Illinois symbol of pride and history. I believe Champ can be that symbol. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Michael. Next, we have Richard Skibsky.
So my name is Richard Skibsky. I received a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration from right here at the University of Illinois in 1987. I'm a lifelong Illinois resident, and I have two sons currently attending, one of whom just spoke. I'm speaking today from an alum's point of view. We need a symbol that represents us. There is a void there. As alums, we feel it. And I believe the transition from Chief to Champ fills that void. Champ fits right in with the Marching Illini at halftime shows and would fill a similar role the Chief did. Champ has a mystique that Chief had and other options might not have. Champ aligns with history, which makes the choice all the more defendable from critics. When I talk to friends, family, and coworkers, many of whom are also alumni, their response is that Champ as a symbol for the university makes perfect sense. It feels right. It is logical for us to go back to World War I, since that is when our name, Fighting Illini, took hold. Illinois' contributions to World War I are widely known and highly regarded for how extensive they were in terms of money, food, manufactured goods, Red Cross nurses, and soldiers. So while Champ is only one aspect of those contributions, it's the one directly referenced by our team name. It's been 100 years since the 33rd and 370th Infantry Divisions, made up of Illinois residents, returned from France. Back then, as today, we Illini were and are known for our work ethic, toughness, and willingness to sacrifice. The Champ symbol and design captures that spirit in a way no other can, because it represents when Fighting Illini as a team name really took hold. It's reverent, respectful, and rings true. I know there are many sides to this issue and that it has been contentious. Ultimately, we are the Fighting Illini, and we can agree our symbol should reflect that. And speaking of agreements, the Treaty of Versailles was signed on June 28, 1919. Please set June 28, 2019 as the day Champ is officially recognized as the symbol for my alma mater, the University of Illinois.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to call on Breland Fay.
Good morning. The sacred tradition of the Fighting Illini will not be entrusted to the weak and timid. This is written above the doorway in the Ubin complex. We all appear to be working toward the same goal: better education, an inclusive campus, and access to opportunities where no one, especially our Native American students, are felt discriminated against or placed in a hostile environment. I tell you now, as a former student, a service veteran, and a proud Native American woman, that this university's current methods are not achieving that goal. Eliminating symbolism, imagery, artwork, and any vestige of our collective history will have the opposite effect, serving only to hold this community back as we express to try to move forward. I speak for the retention of positive Native imagery on behalf of the Native American Guardians Association. As Secretary of NAGA, I have been afforded the opportunity to visit with fractured communities across the nation, struggling with the issue of how to acknowledge controversy and how to heal and educate after Native imagery has been attacked or suddenly taken away without warning or dialogue. In Maine, we have been working with a strong group of local community members, many of them tribally enrolled, fighting with everything they have to retain their name and identity. Though many have had to fight in secret, afraid of retaliation against themselves, their jobs, or their children. I can empathize with that. These warriors understand their history. They understand that in a not too distant point in American history, it was forbidden by law to live with, act like, practice the customs of, or worship with Natives. To do so would be considered heathen and treasonous. Only by fighting this pervasive racism with names, symbols, and imagery in honor of Native people were these communities able to honor their indigenous culture and follow the seventh generation principle that whatever decisions we make today should result in a sustainable world seven generations into the future. Indeed, these principles were in place when Lester Lutwiler and Ralph Hubbard established the tradition of Chief Illiniwek, neither of whom were timid men. They created the symbol to honor the contributions of Native Americans during a time of intense discrimination. This symbol of Native imagery ensured that the contributions of the Illiniwek would never be forgotten, that a subjugated people would always be remembered on the land they once defended with their very lives. But today, that sacrifice is trivialized. Students and faculty attempt to repeat the same mistakes as others, offer no solution other than move past our Native imagery and ignore the influence and contributions of our First Peoples on our past and on our future. Throughout the nation, there's a massive paper genocide happening. One by one, states are dropping their secondary school history education requirements down to nothing before colonial times. Even Virginia, where this all began. This is terrifying. Immigrants coming into this country only have to have the most cursory knowledge of our people. Name two tribes. Within my lifetime, we will have an entire country of educated people living under a government system that they have no idea was based on the great law of peace. In fact, I wonder how many people in this room knew that. The time is coming when the eyes of the nation will be upon us, and you must decide if you will reach out your hand and accept compromise and integrate authentic Native culture into our current traditions, or repeat the shameful and offensive mistakes of past administrations and follow the path of pride and destruction. The choice is ultimately yours, but Illini Nation is watching. We are listening. We know. And we will never stand by, silent nor idle. You cannot, you will not unite this community without us. We are the voice of the people. We are the Native American Guardians. And to leave, I will quote from the 3-in-1, Oski Wow Wow, Illinois. Our eyes are all on you.
Thank you, Ms. Fay. Next, I'd like to call on Ivan Dozier.
Just fire when ready. Well, I come to you guys in the wake of an Illinois win in the Big Ten tournament last night, which is always good. Hopefully we'll get another win tonight against Iowa. And that's especially important to me to get an Illinois win because so much of the past decade has been focused on Illinois loss and what we've lost and how we can try to fill the void from what we've lost. And I think that if we don't understand that void, then we're going to have difficulty moving forward with any symbolism. And there's been a lot of things that have been pitched in the recent time. Every speech that I've heard so far has been about symbolism at Illinois. And why has it taken so long for us to address this struggle? It's because of what we've lost. We've lost a connection to our history. We've lost a little bit of our educational integrity, which is certainly something that we should care about, even if you're not a history buff like me. And we've lost a spirit of true inclusivity and unity. And I think until we understand that loss and try to figure out how we can properly fill it, if we can properly fill it, then we will continue to have our struggles of moving forward. When we had our previous symbolism, we recognized and had a very powerful connection to our history. It's very important to recognize the indigenous history of this land, as the history of Illinois began far before 1914 and World War I. In fact, the history of Illinois began before the state was created in 1818, and even before 1776, with the creation of our nation. And it's important that we maintain the ties and include that history in our collective telling of who we are. We need to honor the spirit of peace amongst conflict. We once had a symbol of peace, and to replace it that with a symbol that glorifies a history of violence and something that bears its origins in war and politics would be unjust. Something that glorifies harm and hardship, like a fire or a tornado, would equally be a slap in the face to what was once a symbol of pride and peace. And we're not just talking about our symbols directly, we're talking about the people who represent them. Too many people who engage in this debate passionately cannot do so without hate and violence, which brings me to our second point of our educational integrity. Too much of this hate and violence comes from faculty members, is supported by faculty members. Too few students are even afforded the opportunity at this university to engage in this debate intelligently, with intelligent discourse. They've lost that connection to the history, and we have replaced it with nothing. We have a broken curricula here at the University of Illinois, where faculty members do not teach both sides of the symbolism issue at Illinois. They only provide their opinion, but they provide it as fact. Even freshmen are required by the university. They cannot come in as freshmen without attending a cultural sensitivity training that shows them a documentary that pushes opinion as fact and nothing else. I would say that we could abolish the cultural sensitivity training, but better yet, we could fix it. We could remove the bias to where it's actually educational and students can come up with their own opinions rather than ones that you're forcing on them or that the faculty is forcing on them. I don't know where the blame goes here. I don't know if it stops with the faculty, I don't know if it stops with you or with our administration, but there is a horrible disconnect here where students are not afforded the opportunity to learn, and that needs to be addressed. And that can be addressed through reprimand. We need to come together, and we're not going to come together if people continue to act in violence. We are not going to bridge the gap in this community by eliminating everyone who is on the other side of us. We need to open up and proceed discussions with all critical stakeholders. We heard some from people who want to see a militaristic view. We've heard from some people who want to see a Native American view. And we need to involve all of those in a discussion, an intelligent discussion, without violence, if we're going to move forward. We need to hold new options to the same scrutiny that we had with our former symbol of Chief Illiniwek. Is CHAMP going to face the same debate about historical accuracy or inaccuracy? Will the Illini veterans have to sign off? Will we allow any other veterans to speak who aren't a member of the campus community? How many people have to be offended by CHAMP before we decide it's a bad idea? One, two, dozens? Is there a number? We need to fix a broken system. We need to hold our faculty members accountable. We need to provide an opportunity for students. And it would be nice to see a bit of an example of that. From the Board of Trustees, I'm asking you a statement of admonishing for students who go too far. I'm wearing my jacket that was ripped off my back in the homecoming parade. I got it repaired with a little bit of orange duct tape here. That's something that no student should have to face. I think that's the beeper. So I'll just say, are we going to be able to bring something that acknowledges our history, our library of information, and a truly inclusive student body, or are we going to move forward as we currently do? It's your call, and it's your loss.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to call on Janet Smith.
Good morning, and thank you. My name is Janet Smith. My remarks today focus on the growing cost of attending UIC and what it means for students in both financial and experiential terms. I'm not here to speak for students as much as to offer a long view perspective of what I've observed since we began using tuition as the basis for distributing revenues under responsibility-centered management, as it's called. First, I want to tell you a little bit about me to preface my give context to my remarks. I'm a professor of urban planning and policy at UIC. I primarily work with graduate students in our master's degree program, which is one of the largest urban planning programs in the U.S. I'm also co-director of the Natalie P. Voorhees Center for Neighborhood and Community Improvement, a 40-year-old endowed research center that works to improve the lives of people in the Metro Chicago region and beyond. We generally hire about 8 to 10 graduate students every year. I'm also a first-generation college student and a proud product of UIUC, both my undergrad and master's degree, and my PhD from Cleveland State University. I went to these public schools because what was offered to me and what my family could afford and what I could afford later on when I was paying for my PhD, but equally because it was great value for a great education. I've been at UIC now for 21 years. This was my first job after my PhD, starting as assistant professor, and I plan for it to be my last academic job when I retire. I love UIC. I love my work. I love my students. And that is why I'm here today. I watched the January board meeting, warm and cozy, from my at home live streaming during the polar vortex. And it was during that meeting that I heard President Killeen announce happily that the board's decision to not raise tuition for a fifth year in a row. I also learned that day that chancellors at both UIC and UIUC also stated there would be a slight increase in fees for students. UIUC about 1% and UIC about 3%. I couldn't help but think it was a false public narrative to publish a headline that day that read, UIC proposing fifth straight tuition freeze for in-state freshmen. Because while tuition has been flat, fees have gone up to cover the real cost of education at UIC. I want to be clear, I'm not arguing to raise tuition. Rather, I'm here asking the board to look at the full ramifications of its decisions and consider how it might offset the structural deficit this model is creating when it comes to fulfilling the university's teaching and research mission. As a reminder, a structural deficit is a budget deficit that results from a fundamental imbalance in receipts and expenditures as opposed to one based on a one-off or short-term factors. There are many strategies UIC is employing to deal with the structural deficit problem. I want to focus on a couple today that have important implications for students and today and in the future. The first is charging students higher fees, and the second is taking on debt through new buildings. Both are potential sources of revenue to offset the deficit problem, but also sources of risk that have real implications for the mission of the university. Let me start with the buildings. I'm not opposed to them or even the billion-dollar plan for our campus. It's about time we made some improvements, having been there 21 years and a building that was falling in the highway, but that's another story. What I'm more cautious about is the seeming leap of faith that enrollment will continue at its fast pace to pay back debt. Having watched the real estate development at other universities in Chicago and around the country become a drag on operating budgets when enrollment targets have not been met. This has been a problem for Roosevelt University, for example, which has led to faculty and staff layoffs. Another concern is the use of special student fee to cover some of the cost. For our current students, they will have an increased cost for them going to UIC now, but those buildings may not benefit them when they're completed later on. For faculty I talked to, the development plan raises a broader question of investment priorities. After years of limited increases in the salary program, we are feeling a little bit like the buildings on our campus. We have a lot of deferred maintenance. We understand that the capital for buildings is not fungible and therefore cannot be readily used to offset deficits. Still, the sense is we are being asked, like our students, to take pain now for future payoffs. But with all that said, my real concern on the non-tuition cost of education for our students, let me walk you through some of the data so you can understand the real cost of attending UIC. The basic tuition for semester for an undergrad is about $5,300 and $5,800 for grad students. In addition, there are fees charged that have gone up through, though not much when adjusted for inflation. Still, this additional $2,200 per semester cost is a source of stress when cash is tight for our students. On top of that, most undergrad and graduate students at UIC now pay a differential. According to UIC administrators, a differential is charged when the cost of instruction or teaching facilities is more expensive than what the base tuition covers. In this academic year, differentials can add an average of another $1,000 per semester for undergraduates. For graduates, however, the amount varies widely per semester, from $384 in social work to $5,147 in public health. The average is close to $3,000 per semester. I hear the beeper. So I want to go on to say that if you start to think about the costs here, what you see is students who are coming into our program are actually feeling a lot of pain too. They're getting paid to come to school to be graduate students, for example, and teach, and they end up having to pay back a lot of that in the differential. So in closing, what I'd like to say is that I want to reiterate that I'm not advocating raising tuition. Instead, I want UIC to be the university our students can afford. As you know, a majority of our students are Pell Grant eligible. Most rely on MAP grants as well. Most important, they are smart and deserving of a quality education they can afford. What I'm asking the board to do is to make public what it costs our students, our faculty, and our academic programs to keep tuition low without some form of support from the university administration. In my humble opinion, the board needs to be held accountable for its actions and responsible for the consequences of its decisions. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm definitely not going to be able to get this name right, but I'd like to call on Anna Mae Ziallo.
Hi, my name is Anna Mae Ziallo, and I'm a senior here at the University of Illinois and president of Fossil Free UIUC. The Fossil Fuel Divestment Campaign, and formerly known UIUC Beyond Coal. I am speaking in front of you today to urge you to reflect on one simple question. Is U of I truly invested in our futures? For many students, we have known for our entire lives that we live in the Anthropocene, that our futures consist of climate volatility, environmental refugees, and threatened global food and water supplies. With 18 of the 19 hottest years on record occurring since 2001, I ask that you reflect on every student's future and the risks investments in fossil fuel industries and rising carbon emissions pose. We must take action ourselves and recognize that the University of Illinois is a body of world-renowned students, faculty, researchers, and an institution of influence cannot afford to be neutral in this matter, and in fact are not neutral. Every action we take is one of consequence. Every dollar we allocate to buy, sell, and invest is a vote. And right now, we are voting for a catastrophic and increasingly inequitable future. At a time when leading the renewable energy transition is critical, we are voting for an industry that consistently lobbies against climate legislation and misguides the public. From 2000 to 2016, the fossil fuel industry outspent environmental groups and renewable energy sector 10 to 1. Again, is U of I truly invested in students' futures? The fossil fuel divestment movement began with U of I when only 3 divestment campaigns existed in the world. Today, this grassroots movement has expanded to over 1,000 institutions, committing a total of $6 to $8 trillion to fossil fuel divestment worldwide. Yale, Oxford, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, New York City, and even the country of Ireland have all committed to some form of fossil fuel divestment. Despite strong scientific consensus, proven economic viability, and international action, U of I refuses to acknowledge our complicity and global influence in the single largest threat to all students, climate change. For years, students here have tirelessly advocated for divestment. In 2013, student body voted 6-1 in support of coal divestment. In 2015, the Student Senate and Academic Senate passed a resolution urging divestment from coal. We then pushed for the creation of a socially responsible investment committee, which investigated and formally advised Chancellor Jones to divest from coal. Still, no action has been taken. Despite unwavering and broad student support, our university chooses to continue to vote for, support, and profit from companies that drive climate change. And this is financially risky. It could cost institutions $1 to $4 trillion in the future in investment loss from stranded assets. And this is enough to potentially cause a recession similar to the 2008 financial crisis. I am here because the students continuously fight. Because last week, 3/4 of the student body voted to divest endowment and University of Illinois Foundation funds from fossil fuels immediately. 3/4. Millions of people my age are mobilizing against climate change because we must live in the future consequences of our actions and of your actions. Overall, I cannot adequately sum up the moral, financial, and historical arguments for fossil fuel divestment in only 5 minutes. But I can say that climate change will inevitably impact every single one of U of I's students, and that we exist at a pivotal moment to aid the transition to renewable energy. Do we boldly lead democratic and economic climate action? Or do we allow other institutions to act as we struggle with the cognitive dissonance between our proclaimed values and our actions? This is not the U of I know and love. I'm here to speak for the students, and I'm here to advocate for collaboration with the Board of Trustees and other faculty members to ensure U of I truly invests in students' futures and divests from fossil fuels today. Borrowing the words of a founding Beyond Coal member, my professors have not allowed me to coast through classes. I implore you not to let our university coast through history. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to all our speakers.